Hey, everybody.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
It's Monday. What happened?
I'm way over there.
Okay. No, you're way over there.
Way over
you
there.
You got plenty of room.
I'm in the video next to this one.
I still think that's super. If I knew how to do that or had the time to like learn how to edit videos, I could put two videos and like would have Tom like go from one video to the other one. That would be super funny. That'd be super funny. But hey, everybody, it's Monday, and you know what that means? It's time for us to talk about an episode of Haunting.
Yeah, everybody pours in here fast when we do these haunting episodes. Look at that.
Yeah, this was a good idea. Like,
right.
Now, like I said yesterday, we had four episodes that were recommended. Yeah. So I wrote all those down, and I said we are going to do those the next couple weeks. But we just didn't know what order we were going to do them in. So last night we were just kind of like we pulled them all out because we had these on DVD.
They're all good.
And Tom's like, oh, let's do this one.
Yeah.
Actually, this was a good one to do because this is actually the first episode, technically.
Yeah.
The first real episode. Because I was sitting there saying, well, didn't they have, like, pilot episodes?
Yeah,
like
a couple pilots.
Haunting of Georgia and Haunting of Connecticut. I think were longer. They were, like, an hour and a half. They don't count those as part. But this was actually season one, episode one.
The funny thing is I was looking at that DVD collection, and Haunting of Georgia isn't on it.
Well, like I said, they consider that a separate...
Yeah.
Haunting of Georgia and Haunting of Connecticut are, like, special episodes, and they were, like, pilot.
Yeah, Summerwind's in there.
And they were almost kind of, like, movies, because I think they were an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. I think they were, like, movie length.
Yeah, I guess they didn't have
they showed those,
to it, or it was, diff-
or
was it or
they show, yeah, they showed those first, and then, like, to gauge, I guess, what the interest was.
Yeah.
And then when they were successful, they started, like, going into production on the season. The weird thing about this one, though, which is called Hell House, by the way, it's season one, episode one, but then if you look it up on Wikipedia, like, because there's a Wikipedia page called List of Haunting Episodes, and the production number on this is 103, which usually means season one, episode three, but
They might have counted the two pilots in there.
Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah.
Either that or they shot this one third and then showed it first. I don't know. It's like, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't
one
matter.
And two is... Georgia and one with Mr. Gordy,
and Haunting
again. Yeah, but evidently this company didn't have the rights to put them on the DVD collection. That's probably
They probably did is they probably released those separately.
Yeah,
because like I said, those are like movie length. As far as I remember, because I have seen them, but I remember them being.
They
like
might
longer.
Be on a separate DVD that I don't have.
That's I think they were because they technically weren't part of season one.
Right,
they were just like
they were pilots.
Episodes. Yeah. So, and they aired, like, a lot earlier than this. But, yeah, so this is Hell House, and it's season one, episode one. And this aired for the first time on October 28th, just a couple days before Halloween of 2005.
This is an Ed and Lorraine Warren case.
I had forgotten that the Warrens... I mean, the Warrens are involved in a lot of the shit. Yeah. And Lorraine was still alive when they did the show, so they did interview with him. I think Ed was already dead by this point, because he's a lot... younger than
I've said before. We've said many times that the Warrens, you know, they were quite a piece of work, but they were prototypes in the paranormal business. Okay, and they did make it a business. All right. I wouldn't trust much of what they say, but they were on some real cases. They were, you know, sometimes they forced their way into interesting cases, like they weren't invited. Like, they weren't invited to Enfield. And Enfield was a well-documented case. Cops and news people saw it. There's some good British documentaries on the Enfield case. They just showed up.
For, like, one day.
One day.
Now,
and
were
claimed
they...
to have solved it. Or I think he said, oh, there's nothing there. You know, or
something. Now, here's
like
the thing, too, because I feel like they always kind of got... And I think they even mentioned it on this episode, too, was that they... were instrumental in investigating the Amityville House or something like that. And I think, like, they were there, but that's a little bit misleading because, one, I don't think they even went to the Amityville House until after, you know, the family had already moved out. And I'm not really sure how much investigating they did in there.
Right. Now, not to say that they were total hacks. It's just I don't agree with a lot of shit that they said. You know, for them it was always demons. There was never anything about parapsychology, no RSPK, no concept of. They had a kind of a weird concept of what a poltergeist was. They thought a poltergeist was a free, formed, a free-floating, fully formed, like demonic entity that just attached itself to people, which that's not what a poltergeist is. It's RSPK, recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis.
Well, if you believe in demons, you're going to make everything.
You're
going to
make everything a demon.
Just all right. Say that.
And I've seen poltergeist. I was a focus. You know, as a kid, we wrote a book about it. So if you guys are new to the show. It's called fucking Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. You'll like it. It's a good book. And it's true. I lived it. And me and my family, my aunt, my uncle, and my cousin. And it still happens to this day, every now and then, depending on what my mental state is at the time. If I'm fucking frustrated or pissed off, something's going to fall, fly, or break. And it's going to be something impossible. Weird. But that's poltergeist. And it's not a demon. It is fucking scary. It's kind of demonic. It has a personality of its own, but it's like a character in one of your dreams. It's like that. Something in your subconscious. And a reason why I'm mentioning this is because in this episode, it's portrayed as a demon, but I'm watching the pattern on how things unfold and the people that are involved in it. I believe that if this case is real, which it does seem like, sound like something that really could happen, similar to some of the stuff that happened to me, this is a poltergeist. I think it's the teenage girl doing it.
I mean, very early on, it did seem very poltergeisty.
Yeah. They went in and tried to exorcise and treat it like a demon, and poltergeist phenomena is just going to adapt to whatever the crowd wants. You know, so they're suggesting that it's now a demon. It starts to act like a demon. It's not even a ghost. They usually start off pretending
to be
a ghost.
Well, this one has ghosts and demons.
Yeah, ghosts and demons together. Well, that's because it starts off, the kid thinks it's a ghost. So it acts like a ghost. And then somebody else shows up and says, it's a demon. So now it becomes, oh, it's a ghost and a demon. You know what I mean? Because it can't back off. Can't back off the first character, so it's a ghost. And it's a ghost.
So we're just going to add shit on.
Yeah, gonna add, it's a ghost that has possession of demons.
Or a demon that has possession.
Yeah, a demon that has possession of ghosts, yeah.
I'm actually, like, really glad, like, I don't remember who it was that, because I know, like, a couple of you guys, like, gave us recommendations when I asked for your favorite episodes, and I know somebody recommended this one, and I had forgotten about this one, but then when we rewatched it, and I'm like, how did I forget this one? This one's actually really good.
This is one of the best ones.
This is a good episode. And like I said, it's kind of like the first one.
Yeah.
So, it's a good, what I'm going to start to do, because we got really lucky, like, the first time we did a haunting episode, because there's a site that has, like, transcripts of, like, various TV shows. And the first episode we did, I think it was Dark Wrath. Yeah. And I think somebody had done, like, a transcript of that episode. And I was like, woohoo, like, I didn't have to take, so I was like, woohoo, I didn't have to take notes. But then, like, the one we did last week didn't have a transcript, and I was like, well, shit. So then, like, we watched it that evening, and then I was like, well, crap, now I have to watch it again. So I had to watch it again, like, to take notes and everything.
Yeah.
So when we watched this one last night, I said, just in case, I took my notebook in the bedroom, and I just, like, and I wrote down notes, like, the whole time of, like, what was happening. So I was like, I don't want that to happen again, and I don't want to have to watch the whole episode over again. So I think I got, like, a pretty good handle of, like, all the stuff that was, like...
Now, I made some comments during that. Did you write down any of the comments? I didn't know if you... I don't know if it would help.
But. Well, you will probably remember, when I talk about, like, what happened in the show.
Because certain things happened in a certain order, and I'm like, that's usually the order it happens in what's called poltergeist phenomenon.
And that's how, I mean, I just wrote everything down just like it happened in the show.
Even all the way down to rapping. That's a poltergeist thing. Rapping and knocking.
Yeah, like
answering questions.
Knocking, not like not like rapping.
Yeah, not rapping like a fucking
Tupac. Not rapping.
But knocking in places.
Tupac is haunting my house.
Yeah, yeah. And you can communicate and it would answer and knock. So that's fucking classic poltergeist. Easy to do that through RSPK.
Yeah, they didn't treat it like that, though. But, you know, that doesn't usually happen. And I will say, too, that I usually try and find, like, some outside sources. Like, if there's other... Because, like I said, when we did Dark Wrath, like, that lady that was on there had actually written a book about her experiences. That doesn't usually happen. This one, it didn't happen. There wasn't a huge amount of outside information about this one. But I did find, one article about it. So we'll talk about that after. So, okay. So this concerns the Beckwith family. They buy this old, like, the house had been repossessed, right? Like, it was an old repossessed house, and it was in a town called Seymour, which is in rural Connecticut. They actually did use the real name of the town this time, because I looked it up, and that's where the house is. So they bought the house in 1998. Now, because the house had been repoed, the price was, of course, too good to be true. Did you guys not see the Amityville Horror? That never ends well, but, you know, whatever. And apparently it was, like, a pretty big house. I think it, like, needed some work, obviously. I think a lot of these do, but, you know, but it was pretty big. So the family we got here, like I said, it's the Beckwith family. The dad is Sean, the mom is Bonnie, and they had three kids. Now, Sean was, like, a heating and AC guy, I think, yeah. And Bonnie was a nurse. Now, the weird thing about this one, okay, so there were three kids, right? That's what they showed in the car and blah, blah, blah. But only two of them were named on the show. I guess the other one was like, fuck it, I don't want my name being known on the show. Maybe. And only one of the kids, like the middle daughter, she appeared on the show, like, you know, grown up.
Yeah, and she's the one I believe was the focus.
Yeah, so I was kind of, so for a little while, I was kind of confused about which, because the weird thing about, like, the actress that they got to play the actual girl that was being interviewed on the show looked more like the actress that they had playing the other daughter. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's just like the other daughter that they had who wasn't really named.
Yeah.
Looked kind of like the real. So I kept thinking that was her. I'm just like, what the fuck is going on? No. So it's like, yeah, I was like really confused.
No. The one that was the one that was portraying the actual daughter is the one that was getting punched in the back when she was in the
Yeah, room. And she was like a blonde, but yeah. the girl in real life was a brunette.
Yeah.
And then the actress that they had playing the older daughter, who they never name in the show, is a brunette. So I kept thinking that was that girl, but it's not.
Could I don't know. Somebody changed their hair color.
Maybe.
Before they fucking recorded the show.
I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know what it was.
She might have been blonde at the time.
Maybe.
Or maybe they didn't care. They just
Or maybe, yeah, they were just like, whatever. Just they were just like, whoever. Because like I said, A Haunting, I feel like they use like the same stable of actors. Because I think the dad, who doesn't really factor a lot into this one, I don't even think he has that many lines, because he doesn't get interviewed on the show. I think it's mostly just the mom.
Yeah.
And the middle daughter, like, they were the only actual family members that showed up. Like, the son didn't show up, the dad didn't show up, nobody did.
Now, the dad was the actual dad. It wasn't a stepdad.
Yeah, as far as I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, they didn't say anything about it.
Yeah, the actual girl that was seemed to be what was called the focus. She's probably about 18 or 19 when she's doing her interview, and she just kind of struck me as like. Yeah, that's the kind of girl that would be a poltergeist focus. You know what I mean? She just kind of looked like it. I just kind of got that feeling from her. She was cute. And a lot of it has to do, if you look through the real cases. Now, you can fake a case because pros know what a real case sounds like and they can just tell a story that fits that mold. So if this case actually happened, and sometimes paranormal witness takes liberties with what the witnesses said to try to make a better show.
Well, no, A Haunting.
The Haunting, excuse me. I get the shows mixed
up. I mean, Paranormal Witness does that too, so.
They do it too. A Haunting will kind of take liberties with what. So when I say if this case really happened, what I mean is if this case happened as portrayed by A Haunting, I'm going to say it's poltergeist. It fits that, okay? And I think she was the focus if the story's being told correctly. Or the way it really happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. Because,
it's plausible.
I mean,
it's
they
similar.
Do, you know, we talked about this before. They do exaggerate things, like, to make the show better, scarier, more entertaining, or whatever. And I have seen some families that were on there that really did believe that, like, bad shit happened to them. But they said, yeah, the show exaggerated or changed the shit around or whatever.
The typical pattern is young female, around 14, 15. Family tension. Possibly kind of like poverty or family breakup happening at the same time. She had a premonition about the house before she ever got
No, that was the older
one. Was the older one?
Okay. That was the one they didn't name. That's what I was going to get into.
That's weird. She had a premonition, which that kind of rang true to me because if you guys have read the book, going up to Mammoth Mountain, I had a bad feeling that I was going to a place that was kind of like something out of The Shining.
Yeah, like you were going to the
Overlook. And we were going up the Sierra Nevada Mountains.
And you'd never been there.
No, I'd never been there. And then when I got there, man, it was just overwhelming fucking feelings of being watched, which that's mentioned also in this. And the place is charged up for poltergeist activity. It feels like you're being watched. Jenny's felt like she'd been watched when there's phenomena happening in here, but it's nowhere near as strong as it was. She only got a real small taste of it. When I was 15 or 14, I don't remember how old I was at the time, but I think 14, it was about 30 times what you felt. That's what the intensity was like. I mean, you could almost, like, cut it with a knife.
The weird thing about that is that the only time, I mean, other than, like, when all the poltergeist shit was going on here, like, with your thing, I never really felt as much like I was being watched as one time in my life, and it didn't really have anything to do with anything. I was sitting at the dining room table at my grandmother's house, like, years ago, and I was just sitting there, like, writing in my notebook or something like that, and I felt like, I mean, I was convinced that somebody was standing right behind me looking
at the back of your neck.
And it was, and I had never felt that in that house. Yeah. I never thought that house was haunted. I lived there for years and years and I never felt anything. I don't know why I felt that, like, all of a sudden, but I was just like, what the fuck? And I, like, went like that. And of course, it was nobody there. And then I kind of laughed because there was a cabinet right behind there that had my grandfather's ashes in it.
Yeah.
And I was like, is my grandfather, like, creeping up and, like, behind me? It's like, that's the first thing that I thought. But that's really the most strong that I've ever felt that. And I have never felt it that strong before or since.
Now, sometimes when I do commentary on these things, on these shows, I will describe something almost in Star Wars terms, like the Force and the dark side. And I do that because there is truth to it. Lucas didn't invent any of that stuff. They got a lot of that from Taoism and Buddhism, okay? And there's truth to that. I've read a lot of that stuff, and it's, there's truth to what they're saying. So that feeling that we're talking about of being watched, I feel it's kind of like an area has become psychically charged, and a person could charge that area up before they even got there, because the person, let's just say the psychic or the person who's sensitive, force sensitive, maybe that's what you want to call it in Star Wars terms, even though they physically have never been to that location, part of them in the spirit world's outside the space-time continuum. So part of that person's soul knows where they're going to be. So it's charging it up before the body ever gets there, because there's a part of your soul that is slightly in a higher dimension outside of space and time and knows where you're going to be. That's probably where premonitions come from. And if you have out-of-body experiences, which I've had those, and a near-death experience, time is not quite the same. It's a singularity. And then once you're outside of it, you can see past, present, and future all happening as a single event. And you can insert yourself any place in it. And it was kind of represented to me as a fucking wheel or a disc or in a record album where you could jump in anywhere. It's like you could put the needle anywhere. It'd be a good way to describe it. A record album is recorded. It's like a singularity. You can put the needle in any place and time and be in any kind of song. Well, space-time's kind of like that. In another dimension, not this dimension. It's in another dimension. And part of your soul, if that's what you want to call it, is in that other dimension. Stuart Hameroff calls it the quantum soul theory, which that sounds right to me. It's your mind is it's quantum particles in superposition, and it's outside the brain, and it's a soul, you know. And I don't think the brain's generating it. I think it's just looking through your brain. It's kind of organizing what the soul does.
Wrath of Khan 87 says, awesome Canon shirt. Where did you get that? And then Danny Rowling said, he made it.
Yeah, I made that.
We made that shirt. I designed it, and he screen printed it.
Yep. I'm
I did the same with this one. I designed this one, and we screen printed this one as well. We screen print our own shirts, like, one at a time.
Yep. It's all hand screen printed and everything. For a $20 super chat, I'll send you one.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'll need your...
Although Khan's in Mexico.
No, this is Wrath of Khan 87.
Oh, okay, I don't know.
This is a different place.
It's a different Khan, right?
Yeah, we have another one that's called Khan of Aslan. Yeah. That's who we thought I was talking about.
Yeah, if you're in the continental United States, I can guarantee you get it to you for $20.
Yeah, we got new ink coming, and I think it's supposed to be here tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that goes, because we ran out. I got confused about the whole daughter situation.
Yeah.
But what it is, when I finally figured it out, like, after I did, like, a little bit more research. So you got the parents, right? Now they have an 8 or 9-year-old kid. Like, at one point he said he was 9, but then, like, later he said he was 8. So whatever. He was 8 or 9, and his name is Jeremy. That's the son. And then the 15-year-old girl, at least in 1998 when they moved there, and her name was Jennifer, and that was the one that was grown up that was talking on the show. And then there was another daughter who was an older teenager. I don't know how old she was. I'm assuming 16, 17. She could drive, so I'm guessing she was like 16 or 17. And I don't think they ever named her, and they didn't really have a lot of shit of hers going on. Now, the older daughter, who was unnamed, daughter X, she's the one that had, like, the premonition about the house. Like, the whole family goes to look at it before they bought it. And they're kind of like, okay, well, we want to buy this one, but we want the whole family to see it. How do you guys feel about it? And she goes there, and apparently, at least this is what they showed on the show. She wasn't on the show, so I don't really know if this is true or not. But she said, or, you know, they showed on the show that the basement door, I guess, like, opened by itself. And she was, like, weirded out, and she was like, I don't like this place. I think she said it's evil, at least according to her mom. And she's like, we shouldn't move here. This is, like, bad news. But nobody else felt anything, so she kind of got outvoted. You know what I mean? Like I said, this is the older daughter. I don't know what her name is. She wasn't on the show. They're just like, so it's all, like, secondhand information. So they move in. Now, the first thing that happens is Jeremy, the kid, the little kid, he starts hearing some weird, like, knocking or banging noises, and some weird noises that kind of sounded like, I don't know, like skittering or something, like, in his room.
Now, let me say something. In the poltergeist cycle, noises tend to start first because that's the easiest thing to generate. Whoever's generating these things or the focus, they're building their confidence up. The subconscious is building the confidence up, trying to figure out what it is that it could do. The easiest phenomena are audio. And then it starts trying to move things. And then it starts to make things try to appear. But, okay, good.
So he hears all these noises. He complains to his mom. He's like, hey, I'm, like, hearing all this weird shit in my room. His mom tells him, like, she had bought him this toy flashlight, like one of those ones, I know what they're talking about, but one of those ones that, like, has three colors. It's like red, green, blue or something, and, like, you could switch to the colors. You guys probably know what I'm talking about. Those toy flashlights. So he had one of those, and she tells him this bullshit story that it's like, well, all you have to do is flash the green light at whatever it is, like the monsters, because she don't really believe him, I guess. And it'll make him go away. And he buys it. And I was like, you know what? I kind of feel like maybe not in 1998. I don't have any kids, so I don't really know. But an 8 or 9 year old boy, you'd think, be like, that's bullshit, mom. You know what I mean? I don't know. So I'm just saying. But of course, you know, that doesn't end up working. I just kind of feel like an 8 or 9 year old boy would probably be too old to fall for that bullshit, but I don't know. Maybe it was different in 1998. So she does that. She tells him that. And then, like, he starts hearing the sounds again later, but it's, like, louder this time. And he's, like, peeking out of the thing, and he apparently sees, and like I said, he wasn't on the show talking, so I don't know. You know, he's just going, we're just going by what the mom said, that he said, and what they're showing in the show. And he apparently saw this kind of, like, big shadow figure that looked like a person, like, kind of dart across the wall. So he hides under the covers, and then something rips the covers off and, like, throws them across the room. So remembering what his mom said, he shines the green light from the flashlight. Like, yeah. Hey, go away. But, of course, that didn't do dick. That didn't do dick. Because, like, she was just trying to make him feel better. She didn't know. Now, according to the mom, like, for a long time, like, after they moved in, Jeremy would pretty much wake up screaming every night, saying he was hearing things and seeing things in his room. And she just thought, you know, you wouldn't really think anything about it, I guess, if you're a mom. And he's just, like, still kind of a little kid. But then, Jennifer, the 15-year-old, she starts feeling weirded out in her room, too. At first, mostly feeling like she's being watched all the time.
Now, this is around the same time? Or
I guess. Like I said, it's a haunting, so it's, yes. Like, sometimes they'll be, like, 2 days later or something like that. But then sometimes they'll just kind
They're
of be,
vague
like,
about the time.
A while later or, right. You know, it's whatever.
Usually, if you actually read the real credible and documented cases, it's the poltergeist focus, or the person that's making it happen, is the first one to witness it. That's usually how it goes. Wouldn't surprise me as if she witnessed it first.
Maybe, and didn't say anything, or didn't
know that she witnessed.
Because the first thing that they put on the show was that the little kid started hearing things.
When I first started seeing it, I wasn't sure if something just fell over because it fell over, or if it was pushed over. Or, you know what I mean? It was hard to tell. Like, remember when my little travel bag.
Yeah.
I left it on the bed, turned my back on it, came back with a suitcase, and saw the travel bag on its side and some socks, rolled up socks, go flying. They were in motion when I saw them, and then they just kind of screeched to a halt when I looked at it. And I said, it looked weird. It almost, the socks almost looked like they were blurring when they fucking stopped. And I was like, yeah. It's like it couldn't move it when you were looking at it. It was just a weird thing. It's like looking at it caused them to stop moving. And I wasn't sure if it just fell over and I kind of imagined that or what. So I just blew it off. I didn't realize that was the first thing I saw, and I didn't realize it until later once it had been confirmed that more shit was moving. So it might have been that. I was weirded out already by the time that even happened.
If you see something that's kind of like still has implausible deniability.
Yeah.
At first.
That was the first thing that happened, and it was with, and I had only been in that house for 5 minutes. It was instant. Not even 5 minutes, maybe 2 minutes. Walked in, this place is fucking weird. I'm going to take this room. Went into that room, just put the bag there, went back out to the car, which was only right in front of the door. Parking lot was right there. And I went back in and saw that something had knocked over the bag and was rummaging through it. And fucking the socks stopped moving. It's weird.
It is pretty weird.
And I was like, what? And I thought, maybe it just fell over and the socks rolled out.
Well, yeah, that's what you would think.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But how did it open? Because it had a zipper on the top of it. Yeah. It kind of had two straps. It was a little 70s looking thing.
Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So at this point, so Jennifer's like weirding out of her room, like feeling like everybody's watching her, right? So then one night, like they kind of do a jump scare, like on the show, where Jeremy comes into her room and tells her, hey, I'm getting freaked out. Like, somebody keeps calling my name, he apparently said, and ripping the covers off him. Which, yeah, that would be, like, pretty upsetting.
That'd scare the shit out of me.
If you were 8 or 9 years old. Well, that would scare the shit out of me, like, right now. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Would it? Yeah, it probably would.
Hell yeah.
But then I'd just be like, I don't know. I think it would be kind of, like, interesting also.
Yeah.
I'd be kind of, like, interested. So this apparently the same night that happened, that the little kid came into her room and said, you know, all kind of weird shit's happened in my room, Jennifer's bed starts shaking. Now, she is on the show. So she described it. She said it felt like someone was, like, under the bed punching the underside of the mattress with their fist. And it was, like, causing the whole bed to move. That's what she said it felt like.
Yeah.
So, of course, she jumps out the bed like, what the fuck? And, it, like, looks under there, and, of course, there's nobody there.
I could imagine that. But yeah. luckily, my poltergeist never touched me. It touched Lois, but it didn't touch me. Weird.
Well, didn't you ask it not to?
Yeah, I said, don't you... I fucking said, I like, don't you fucking touch me? I don't want to see you. So it never even appeared. I was afraid it would appear as like some rotten corpse or something fucking scary. And it never, it only appeared.
Looking like the Crypt Keeper or some shit.
It
like
only appeared as kind of like a bluish haze. Like a bluish haze or a fucking kind of a weird translucent ball that you, about the size of a softball or a cantaloupe, and you're not really sure if it was there. If you looked directly at it, it vanished. But if you looked a little bit beside it, you could kind of see an image. And me and Red are like, you see that? I'm like, yeah. And you try to focus on it, and it wasn't there. It wasn't there. But if you looked to the side, you could kind of see it, like a distortion. It's weird. It was up there in the corner of the fucking room, up there in the corner near the ceiling. And then we'd be like, it's gone. Like, yeah, it is. It's gone. We could tell. We would both agree when it was there, or when it wasn't there, like some kind of and it had a kind of a presence to it. It felt like that there was somebody watching you from there.
Like that's where the
it's like where it was
consciousness was.
Yeah, was up in a corner looking at you. Something like that.
But yeah, so she feels this in her bed, right? So she jumps out, like obviously, and looks under the bed. Obviously, there's nobody there. Now she's like, well, I didn't really want to tell my parents because I thought that they wouldn't believe me. She's like, so really the only thing that I could think of to do was to move the bed across the room.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Oh, no. When she said that, it got more credibility with me because we were trying to do irrational things like that too. And doing you know, like.
Well, yeah, like what else could you do? Right. I mean, it's just kind of like. well, I'll move it over here. Maybe the ghost doesn't like this corner. You know what I mean? Or whatever.
Well, you're just trying to... You're trying to find a solution some way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so that made total sense, right. Like, when she said that. Even though you know it's not going to do anything, like, that made total sense that you would
Maybe it did kind of do something. I don't know. Maybe it did. She didn't say that it did it anyway.
No, yeah, it did. Because that's what, see, that's what happens when you jump ahead. Because
She
moves the bed across the room, because that's all she can think of to do. Two nights later, though.
Yeah.
She's laying on her bed in the evening, and she's, like, talking on the phone, and the bed starts moving by itself again. It was kind of like, what they showed on the show was kind of like shaking, like, Exorcist style, where it was kind of like, I don't know if it was, like, all, like, coming off the floor and stuff, but it was like somebody was, like, somebody really strong was, like, underneath it, like, punching.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like rattling it kind of thing. That's, she said that's what it
was. What's weird is that, I guess because not everybody has agreed that this is a phenomenon that's actually happening, that they're still separate. As soon as we all realized that this was something that was happening, in my case, we were all in the same room together pretty much always. If anybody went to the bathroom, somebody was outside the door fucking guarding you. Yeah, it was like being in a house with a monster.
Guarding you like Pookie stays up and guards us every night.
Well, you're not sure what could happen. I mean, it was definitely strong enough to kill you. It didn't seem to be... You know what I mean? You're very... nobody wants to be by themselves.
Yeah, I get it. Well, that happens in this one, too. But it takes a while.
I mean, the first night, we did try to sleep separate. But I was sleeping upstairs on the couch, and Wesley was still downstairs. It didn't really seem to bother him. But it fucking did bad shit on that day. And after that, we were all up on a fucking hide-a-bed. Sleeping in the living room on the hide-a-bed. Yeah.
So, at this point, I guess, like, the morning after that happened... you know, they do kind of like a fake jump scare among the hedges. That's what I wrote in my notes. Yeah. Because they did a thing, like, you know, for the show. They're trying to make it more like a horror movie. So Jennifer is, like, trying to find her mom. And she's like, where's my mom? And she's, like, out in the yard. And it's like it looks like a hedge maze from the fucking Shining or whatever. And then, like, she sees the hedge moving. And she's like, what the fuck is that? And she's like, oh, it's mom. So, you know, so it was a mom jump scare. So she finds mom. And she tells her about what happened. Now, Bonnie, I don't know if she didn't, like, initially believe. She was skeptical, though, but she was concerned enough that she's like, okay, well, we're going to have, like, a family meeting about this stuff and see what we can see. So they get everybody together, and it turns out that all of the kids have been having similar experiences in their room. Because I'm assuming that Jeremy, the little kid, the little boy, like, didn't tell the mom about the shit either. And I guess Jeremy didn't either. And I don't know about the older sister. Like I said, she didn't want to move to the house. We don't really know that much about her input. I don't even know what her name was. But, yeah, so apparently they're all having similar kind of, like, situations happening. Hearing weird noises, like beds moving, stuff like that. So... the mom and the dad, like I said, the dad doesn't really factor into this one all that much. They don't really, like, ask him about it. He's not interviewed on the show. The actor doesn't really have that many lines or whatever. So evidently, they were just kind of like, okay, kids, we believe you. And you know what that means? That means it's time to call the Warrens. Time to call the Warrens. I mean, they called the Warrens, like, pretty early.
They were famous then.
Well, yeah, I guess they were.
Yeah. Wonder how they found or got their number. When did they file their number?
Let's see. It was 1998.
Oh, so, okay. So it wasn't that... They had internet back then.
Yeah, but I mean... Yeah. I guess.
Yeah.
So they probably went to their terrible, like...
Just went off the website.
Angel Fire website or whatever it was back in 1998. Yeah. Was that still a thing in 98?
Yeah, probably
remember.
Was.
I was there, but I don't remember.
Yeah. She was coming and going real fast. Prodigy.
Yeah. And, like, all the websites, all the websites were terrible and ugly, and just like
they were just like you could make your own just by answering questions and pressing yes and no.
Just like all these, like, ugly links everywhere, flashing GIFs and all this other kind of shit. But yeah,
I fucking miss old internet though. It was like the Wild West.
I don't.
Just slow. That was the problem.
If you want to see old internet, I think you can go to who's that cult that had the Nikes and all, like, committed suicide?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I think their website still looks like that. Someone's still maintaining it though, like it's still around. Like, but I think
Heaven's Gate.
Yeah, Heaven's Gate. There you go. I think it still looks like that. I could be wrong. They could have updated it at this point. Because I kind of feel like, is that even sustainable? Like, just go to fucking Squarespace or Weebly or something and make a fucking good looking
website. You can't get on MySpace anymore. I think it's gone.
No, I said Squarespace.
No, I know that, but I'm just talking about MySpace, and that was that wasn't even as old as that. So I'm not sure you could even get on that shit anymore. You probably could.
Well, like I said, I don't know where they're hosting the shit. Yeah. But you know what I mean? So they call the Warrens up. Now, Lorraine was actually still alive when this show was recorded, so she's interviewed on the shit. And she said, of course, this is what she was going to say. As soon as she walked in, she knew the place was infested. I think that's the word she used, infested. And, of course, the darkest energy coming from Jennifer's room. It's weird because once the Warrens showed up, because it feels like the little boy, they were focusing on him at the beginning because he had most of the shit happening. Like, oh, I saw like a big shadow darting across and like all the noise and stuff. But then after the Warrens showed up, they're like, oh, they mostly concentrated on Jennifer's room. They're like, that's where all the bad shit's happening. So, I don't know. So Lorraine tells them, well, I kind of want some more like physical evidence. So why don't you guys like start keeping cameras by your beds so that if you feel like something's watching you in the room or something, like take pictures around the room and see like what comes out on the pictures. That's what she told them to do.
Yeah.
So Bonnie's mom, Bonnie is the mom and this is her mom. So this is grandma. She comes to visit for Thanksgiving. Now this is the first time she's been here, presumably. Because they just moved there. So she stays in the guest room. Now, Jennifer described her as, like, a real... She said she was, like, real humorous and that she would always make jokes about, you know, even real bad shit that was happening, like, to try and make everyone laugh and feel better about it. You know what I mean? Like, she was one of those kind of women. So Grandma is in the spare room trying to watch TV, but the damn thing keeps going off by itself. And she's just like, what the fuck? And she just, like, keeps turning it back on with, like, the remote control. Like, why does this shit keep going off? So after a few times, though, like, when it goes off, then she notices the reflections of three dudes, like, in the blank TV screen. Like, it goes off, and she sees, like, three guys, like, and she, like, whips around, but nobody's back there.
Yeah. And then youngsters probably wouldn't know what the fuck we're talking about. Back in those days, since CRT televisions were, they were gray, but they were glass-like and reflective when they weren't on. And you could see what was behind you like in a mirror. You know what I mean? You could see in the damn thing when it was off. And nowadays in fucking flat-screen televisions, it's like they don't do that anymore. But back in those days, you could see a reflection in a TV screen.
Wait, I feel like you could maybe still see a well, it depends on what the lighting is like, I guess, in the room.
Not really. Not like it was.
Our room is like constantly dark, so I wouldn't know.
Well, CRT screen was glass.
That's true.
Okay, so it was glass. So it was real reflective. Today, it's just kind of a matte plastic, clear plastic. You can't really get a reflection in it anymore.
But yeah, can you ask, like, I feel like that's kind of like a trope on Haunting, though. It's like where you kind of like, you turn the TV off and you're like, holy shit, there was like, because that happened on Dark Wrath, too. Like she saw Seth in the thing. But yeah, so she sees the three guys, she whips around, there's nobody there. And then she whips back around, I think, like the editing was weird in this situation, in this kind of like scene. But she whips back around to the front, and then she sees, allegedly, I guess like an apparition. On the show, it looked like just a dead dude who was maybe like sitting in the chair next to the TV. I couldn't really tell. This wasn't specifically mentioned by any of the family members. Like, the grandma wasn't interviewed either. So I'm not sure if this was just added for effect or was just, like, an extension of the three reflections that she saw. Like, this is a... Like, they wanted to make it look more impressive or something like that. So I'm not really sure. Because nobody said, hey, she whipped back around and then there was a dead guy sitting in the chair next to... But that's kind of what it looked like. But the editing was weird, so I couldn't really tell. But regardless, it was bad enough that Grandma just, like, noped the fuck out the next morning. She's like, nope, I'm not staying here. Bye. And she left. I don't know if it was before or after Thanksgiving. Did she even, like, get any turkey or not? Because I was like...
She probably stayed for turkey.
I was going to say, it's like, I don't know why that was so important to me to know. Because I'm like, I don't know. Even if there was ghosts in my room, I'm like, I think I'm going to at least stay for some turkey. I'll tough it out, but for Thanksgiving dinner, because that's my favorite. But yeah, so she nopes out. So after she leaves, Jennifer said, remembers what Lorraine said about the cameras. So she goes into the spare room and starts just, like, taking pictures. And she said while she was taking pictures in there, she said the temperature dropped, like, significantly. And the mom said that the room was, like, 40 degrees colder than the rest of the house. They said the rest of the house was, like, you know, 73, 75 degrees. That room almost felt like freezing temperature, like in the 30s. Yeah. That's what she said.
Yeah, it was weird. It was like that at Mammoth Mountain, too. But it was snowing outside, so it was hard to tell. We'd set the fucking thermostat, and it might say 70 in there, but it still felt freezing cold. But it didn't feel like a real cold. It just felt like something sucking heat out of you. It felt paranormal. Didn't feel normal. It's weird. You weren't sure if the chill was down your back or if it was on your skin. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It was like that. You weren't sure if it didn't feel normal, the temperature. But you weren't sure if it was temperature or if it was like psychology somehow, emotion. It was hard to tell. It's hard to tell the difference. I don't know. It's just weird. Nothing we never really could put our finger on.
Yeah.
Just felt cold in there at certain times. Sometimes it would just be like in a little zone that you could walk through it and then walk back through it. You go, it feels cold right there. But you weren't sure if it was natural or not, you know? It's just weird.
Danny Rowling says, good job, Jenny. I'm bringing all this knowledge to the show about these cases that weren't even in the episodes. Well, I kind of feel like that makes it more interesting because I like the episodes, but I don't want to just... I mean, I want to talk about what happened in the episode, but I kind of want, like, more context on it if I can find any. So the grandma leaves. Now, the Warrens come back after Thanksgiving, and they bring with them, like, two researchers. That's what they called them on the show. One's just a regular-ass paranormal investigator with all those cameras and shit. And then the other was, I guess, like, she was, like, a psychic... She was a medium, right? I mean, apparently.
Yeah.
So she's a psychic medium, and her name was Lee.
She looked like a black metal hippie chick.
She did. The actress did it. Anyway. Yeah, I don't know what the real girl looked like because she wasn't. She wasn't on there, was she? The other paranormal investigator, he was on there talking. Yeah. That's right. I forgot.
Yeah, they
about
never
that.
Found the medium.
But I don't think the medium was on there, like the real one.
Yeah, the girl that played her on the episode had black hair parted down the middle and wearing black, and then later on she was dressed kind of like a. Like a heavy metal hippie or something.
I wonder if she was on any other episodes.
I think she was.
Like a gothy witch.
Who
played with a Ouija board and got everybody in trouble.
You're right. She was something like that.
Probably. I feel like that's kind of what she got typecast as.
Yeah.
In the haunting roster of actors. Yeah. All right. So they all show up. At this point, the family had been taking a bunch of pictures around the house. So they show the Warrens the pictures. Now, most of them evidently were, you know, just bullshit and not of anything. But one of them, now this is interesting because this is one of the few episodes of A Haunting, I guess because it was the first one and they hadn't really like established the formula yet, but they actually did show the actual picture.
Yeah.
They actually showed like actual picture and actual artwork on this one, but which they don't usually. That's usually a paranormal witnesses bag, but they did it on this one.
And I thought the picture was pretty good. That's probably why they showed it.
Yeah, maybe that's why they just kind of felt like, well, we'll show the picture if it's like spooky looking, but most of the pictures are probably kind of like lame, and it's just like, so they probably didn't show
it. Just a picture of inside of an interior, and where a door was, there was just kind of like it looked like some kind of chemical problem or something in the way that the film developed it. It just looked like a gold oblong shape there, not very big. According to, if to say to scale, probably about 8 inches tall and about 6 inches wide, kind of oval shape. But
yeah,
it looked odd. It looked odd.
It wasn't an orb. Like, no. I couldn't tell what I was like. I'm assuming that this picture was probably taken in the spare room.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know if it was the spare room or Jennifer's room. It looked like somebody had taken a picture, like, of the closet door. Because this was the actual picture.
Right.
And it was like, it wasn't a smudge and it wasn't an orb.
No.
It was kind of like, when we were watching it last night, I told Tom, I was like, it looks like a shmoo.
Yeah, it looks like some kind of chemical problem in the way that the film got developed. Like, like some kind of acid fell on the film or something weird.
It looked like a chemical burn. It could have been that.
But it was, odd that that was centered in the photograph pretty much. And it did look weird. Now,
it did kind of.
They didn't see that when they took the picture. But it could.
Well, that's implied. They didn't really say that out loud, but.
Well, if they said they saw it, they would have said that. Mm. They just took a picture of the door for some reason. Maybe they had a weird.
Well, they were just taking. Yeah, they were just taking pictures. Evidently, they were just taking pictures of the house just because they felt weird or they felt a presence or something.
Maybe there was some kind of a paranormal event happening, and it affected the way the film developed. So I'm not saying that is a picture of the demon, because that's what fucking Elizabeth Warren's going to say. Oh no, that's a demon.
Lorraine Warren,
excuse me, yeah. She going to get mad. Lorraine Warren, I thought it was Elizabeth, but yeah, Lorraine. She goes, oh no, that's a demon. That's a high level demon, of course, you know, because that's what Lorraine.
Even though said. I said it looks like a shmoo, it's a shmoo demon. That's what I thought.
Right.
It didn't have a face on it. It didn't look like... I kind of feel like if you... Okay, now if you took a picture of a fucking closet door in your house and there was nothing there when you took the picture, and then you got the picture developed for you kids, you used to have to take your film to get developed instead of... Yeah. So I'm just... Because I know we have some younger listeners who might be like, what are you talking about? But yeah. So if you did that and then you got the picture back... And the picture was, like, of a very obvious, like, demon face, like, popping out your closet. Then, yeah, I might be calling... I don't think I'd call the Warrens, but, yeah, maybe I'd call an exorcist or something.
Yeah.
This one seemed a little ambiguous. And, honestly, it's a weird-looking photo. I'm not saying that. But, like, even the mom, Bonnie, she was on there saying, well, when I first saw the picture, I didn't really think that much of it. I just thought it was, like, something was wrong with the film or it was, like, something like that. But then when they were showing the pictures to the Warrens, Lorraine was like, oh, that's a really bad demon you got right there. I'm like, how can you tell? It just looks like a shmoo.
Yeah. It looks like an irregularity in the film, but those were very rare even back in those days. But look at it this way. When you're taking a picture, you got light coming into the camera, it goes into the lens, and then it fucking flips around and projects itself on a bunch of photosynthetic paper. Maybe if there's some kind of weird anomaly, you know what I mean, like a paranormal fucking ghost or a paranormal fucking concentration.
As opposed to those non-paranormal ghosts?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Maybe the light that's coming into the camera, maybe it's a little bit different. Maybe it's been altered, like it's gone through a lens, and then it affects the way the light ended up being cast on the film on the back of it. So maybe some kind of quantum anomaly may have been able to do
But that. I don't know. I mean, that seems like
you
a big...
You think you would be able to see it with your eyes.
That seems like a big leap to go from that to, oh, that's definitely like a really bad, like high-level demon.
Yeah.
Lorraine.
But, you know, who knows? Maybe if you go astral or something and you're astrally projected out of your body and somebody takes a picture of where you're looking at them from, maybe the image will be a little bit distorted for some reason, quantum physics or something. Maybe somehow it affects the damn light. But you would think that although maybe not necessarily true, but you would think if it affected the photosynthetic paper, it would affect the back of your eye, you'd be able to see it. But
see, that's what makes it.
But when I had that weird out-of-body experience, my roommate when I was in the Army did basically tell me he saw something up towards the ceiling. But he wouldn't tell me what it was. It was probably just a feeling of being watched, probably. I don't really think you can see a person, you know, when they're astral, if that's the word you want to use. Well, maybe you can. I don't know.
Tammy says, you wouldn't need to call the Warrens. They would just show up. Maybe that, well, yeah, there. Maybe that's, well, maybe there's something to it, because Lorraine always said she was psychic. She's like, I know that there's going to be like...
Oh, they were psychic.
And they just like ring my doorbell. I'm like, holy shit, how did you guys know?
Well, they were psychic enough to
I took a picture of a shmoo in front of my closet.
They were psychic enough to turn on the television and read the newspaper, and if fucking a case showed up on television or in the newspaper, they'd fucking go running towards it. Yeah, to say, we did that case. Yeah, we were on that case.
Yeah, that was kind of their whole
thing. That's their whole thing.
That was kind of their whole thing.
They were on cases, but they stole cases, too. If a big case is going on somewhere, they'd barge right in.
It's like, we need to get involved in that.
And even though they might just be there for a few hours and then get kicked off.
But then they go write a whole book about it.
They write a whole book about it. And they say, we were there. They go on Geraldo, go on the talk show. Yeah, we handled that case. Yeah.
Well, and in this one, it's like they did get brought in, but I kind of feel like, you know, if it was resolved, I don't really know if they had a lot to do with it, but, you know, we'll get into that. So, yeah, so the Shmoo picture. Okay. So, meanwhile, like, at this point, the psychic medium lady, Lee, you know, the headbanger chick, she starts, like, doing, like, shaking, like, she's possessed and some shit. And then she starts to do some automatic writing. She's like, paper, paper, paper. Yeah.
Hold on one thing.
What?
About the photograph. It was interesting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like I said, it wasn't just like an orb, like, oh, that's clearly a bug.
But we took many pictures with the old Polaroid Instamatic kind where it would come out and develop. We probably took about 12, 15 pictures maybe during Mammoth Mountain. And we got pictures of stuff that it had moved, things that it did, making shapes. Making little happy faces and shit out of rolled up towels, but there was never any anomalies on the
film. I mean, I've seen the photos. They don't look anything.
No, they just look mundane. But they're crazy. What the fuck are we taking pictures fucking of folded up towels?
Yeah, that's
for?
What's creepy about that.
Why are we taking pictures of fucking fucking rocking chairs upside down with fucking towels fucking folded over top and shit? Yeah, it was because we just were fucking
we
amazed.
We found it like that.
We were amazed. That's why.
And you didn't know how it was.
And it did
like
it
that.
In seconds, you know? So we just took a picture of it. Yeah.
Willa Lee says, really? The Warrens did that? Yeah.
Yeah.
That was kind of their whole bag.
That was 50% of their shit.
Yeah, I mean, I guess once they got famous, like, people did actually call them. Okay? Yeah. But another thing was that if there was a case in a town, like, near there, because they lived in Connecticut, like, somewhere in the Northeast.
Well, they would fly, too.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying, like, if there was a case that was real popular...
Yeah, they would go.
Then they would go there, and then they'd show up and, like, offer their services.
Yeah.
As far as I know, they didn't ask for any money.
No.
But, you know, which is good, because that would be really shitty.
But they would
make
money, though.
But they would later make money because they would say, oh, I was on this case, that case, and the other. And sometimes, like I said, they would write a book about it or they would do like a lecture tour about
They'd
it.
They'd go on talk shows.
And go on talk shows and talk about it and stuff like that.
And talk about other stuff.
Yeah, that's kind of like was kind of their whole like business thing.
Yeah, Ed was a good businessman and he was fucking pushy. And he would bully his way through a situation. And if you defied him or called bullshit, he would just start yelling. Oh no! So you know he was.
Yeah, I kind of feel like he would sort of like strong arm.
He was kind of ghost gangster. He's ghost gangster.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. That's what his biography should be called.
Yeah,
ghost gangster.
Yeah, Ed Warren, ghost gangster.
Well, he said, "Oh my God."
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, the Conjuring movies don't show you that, do they?
No. No, but
and the thing about it was that
my sources are fucking cases that had dealt with him, the books.
And the thing about it too is that I mean, the Conjuring movies.
Yeah.
I think the second one was based on the Enfield case, and like I said, in real life, they did show up at the Enfield case, but one, they weren't invited. I mean, because it was in England.
Yeah.
They heard about it, so they flew over there. And everybody that was already investigating the Enfield case said they showed up, like, one day and kind of, like, tried to throw their weight around and stuff. But it's like they didn't really do anything, and then they left, and then they, like, made a whole movie about them solving the shit. They're like, that's not what happened.
Yeah, I think it was that one Conjuring one that they did.
That's what I just said.
Yeah,
I think it was the second one.
It was all based on them being there, like, a couple of hours. No, excuse me. The Conjuring... They weren't in that one Conjuring one. That one actually was a reinterpretation of This House is Haunted. I think the Warrens do show up in the movie, don't they?
Well, the whole Conjuring universe is based around the Warrens. They're every single...
So they're in every single one of them?
Well, that's kind of like the whole Conjuring
universe. Okay.
And like I said, the first one... What was the first one? Was the first one... I can't remember. It wasn't the Smurls. It was, crap. I can't remember what it was. But it was kind of a case that they had extensively worked in. But I think the second Conjuring movie...
Yeah.
Was the second or third one? I can't remember. The second or third one was based on Enfield. And I was like, they absolutely did not investigate Enfield. They showed up there one day.
Yeah.
Because I read the book from, like, that was written by the dude that was there, like, the whole time.
Guy
he was there for,
fair.
What was he there, like, 18 months or some shit? He was there for, like, a long time.
There were two of them.
There were two of them, yeah.
Yeah.
There, Morris Gross,
Morris
who was
Gross
a parapsychologist and Guy Lyon Playfair. And so he was a journalist, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was
and
a journalist.
He grew up in Brazil. So, British guy grew up in Brazil, yeah.
So they were both there, like, a year and a half, and they said, yeah, the Warrens, like, showed up from America. Like, we didn't, nobody invited them. They just turned up.
Yeah.
And they were there for, like, a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And we were just like, yeah, we got this.
Yeah.
And and now it's like the Conjuring movies make it look like they solved the whole shit.
Yeah,
it's like,
right.
That's not, like, there's a book called This House is Haunted.
Yeah.
Which I think it's been republished, like, since the second Conjuring movie. So read that, because I don't even think they mention the Warrens in there. I have to read it again. I have it somewhere.
I think
but.
They just mentioned that other investigators showed up and they had to be kicked off. They said a lot of them showed up and they had to be kicked off.
Right, yeah. Yeah,
and the Warrens were just in the fucking thing.
Yeah, but that case was, like I said, Morris Gross from the British, you know, the
psychical research.
The psychical research thing.
Yeah.
And Guy Lyon Playfair, who was like a journalist who was interested in that kind of stuff. Those were the two main guys, and I think there was another guy that was like another journalist that came in and out. But they were there for like a year and a half.
Yeah.
Not, they weren't living there, but like for some time they would like come every day. And sometimes I think they did stay there for, like, extended periods.
On an interesting side note, Playfair, he got into the paranormal because he when he was in Brazil, if I remember correctly, it was Brazil, I think, because I know he kind of grew up there. He was investigating psychic surgeries and said that they were phony, except for one. He saw one dude. He can't explain it to this day. He saw that dude open another man's abdomen and look in there. He saw all the fucking guts and the inside of that guy's abdomen. And he reached in there and pulled out something.
Yeah, because see, usually they just do this and like have a chicken liver palm and some shit like that.
Yeah, he said there's one guy he couldn't explain. He saw him open up an abdomen and he could see right into that dude's fucking guts. And then he reached in there and pulled out something. I forgot what it was. Piece of cancer. Pulled out. I think he cut some of it with a fucking knife.
Piece of cancer.
Yeah, but pulled out some cancer.
That sounds like
I'm gonna call the shit a piece of cancer.
No, I was gonna say that sounds like a good. That sounds like a good title for like a story.
Yeah,
a piece of cancer.
And he said he had a weird feeling when it was going on. When that went on, he said he had the fucking weird feeling like he was seeing something unnatural. And then the guy sealed the fucking hole up somehow. Just rubbed it like that, and the fucking hole sealed up. That he didn't see, he'd never seen anything like it, and that's what got him into the paranormal. And he never saw it. He never saw it again. Weird. Said only that one dude did it, but I wasn't there.
Yeah, but so like I said, you know, we've done a couple shows about the Warrens.
Yeah.
So there's a lot about them that the Conjuring movies are.
Yeah, hyping.
It's not the way they really
were. Not to say that they were on fake cases. I think they were on some real cases. But I don't think it was demons.
But a lot of the movies show them like a lot more involved in those particular cases than they actually were.
Right.
That's the thing. So at this point, we got like the psychic Lee. She starts to do like the automatic writing, like I said. And basically, the automatic writing just said, get out, get out, get out. You don't belong here. Stuff like that, like on this page. So the researchers then go and they set up in Jennifer's room. Now, downstairs, I guess around the same time, Bonnie, the mom, she seems to get sort of kind of possessed briefly, or at least feels something like really cold, like a cold presence like passing through her. And then Jennifer, the daughter, like she feels the same thing a few seconds later. Jennifer on the show said it felt like a freezing cold entity thing, like just came out of the wall, went through her mom, and then went through her. She said that's what it felt like.
That's kind of where the poltergeist felt.
So, meanwhile, the paranormal researcher, and they did interview the real guy on the show. So they had set up in Jennifer's room, and he said that they recorded a bunch of weird noises in there. They didn't play them on the show, unfortunately. He said they recorded, like, knocking on the walls, the ceiling, and the floor. And something, I thought this was kind of interesting, something that sounded like bird wings fluttering.
Yeah.
He said that's what it sounded like. So they recorded that.
Phantom noises.
Yeah. So then he decided, well, let's try and communicate with the entity or whatever through knocking, like once for yes, twice for no, all that kind of stuff. So they claim that through this method, they found out that there are three human spirits in the house, and they're being kept there by, of course, a demon. Because the Warrens are there, so you know there has to be a demon involved in the whole situation. Sometime around here, Lee the psychic gets possessed and starts doing the automatic writing again. Now, on this one, she writes three names, George, Robert, and Anna. And then she writes a full name, George Robertson. And then she writes a number, 1-8, and then a partial 8. But before she can finish what she was writing, like, a growly voice comes out of her mouth saying stuff like, why are you questioning me, blah, blah, blah. Then she shoves, they're in, like, the kitchen or the dining room, whatever. And then she shoves the table kind of violently and pins Ed Warren against the wall. You know, so there was that whole thing. That was a very funny scene, actually. I was kind of amused. Well, it's like, well, the actor they had playing Ed Warren didn't look anything like Ed Warren. Actually, the one they had playing Lorraine didn't look anything like Lorraine either. But I just thought it was kind of funny where they were just kind of like, they speeded up, kind of like, whoa, my God, I'm against the wall. Yeah,
she's about the same age as Lorraine, but Lorraine was a fucking bony little bird-like old lady. Skinny.
Yeah.
Skinny little old lady.
Yeah, and the one they got in the show was more like a little bit of a dumpy, like, grandmotherly type. Whereas, Lorraine always kind of like... And she always
Lorraine
wore this...
Lorraine looked like she weighed 100 pounds.
And she always wore, like, those really weird, like, Victorian clothes, like, with the high collars and stuff.
Well, they were religious.
Yeah, I know.
They were kind of like Baptists of some sort.
But I thought that was always funny that she was... I guess that was kind of... And after a while, I guess that was kind of like their trademark or their brand or whatever.
That's
so
their uniform.
Like, so she can't, like, wear anything else, even
if
she wanted to.
If you guys can look up what their denomination was, I know he just called himself a religious demonologist. Okay, which that can mean
are there
anything.
Any other kind of demonologist?
Yeah, I mean, that can mean anything.
I'm an atheistic demonologist.
Yeah, I don't know what... What's he reading? Fucking, what's it, Maleficarum or fucking the Devil's Hammer?
Malleus Maleficarum.
Yeah, yeah.
The Witch's Hammer.
The Witch's Hammer, yeah. I mean, how does one become a demonologist? All I can think of is to fucking read that old bullshit.
That's probably how... Yeah, you can't get a degree in it or anything, I don't think, unless from some, like, not accredited anyway, I'm sure.
I think they were some kind of Southern Baptist.
Yeah, just read a bunch of, like, old demonology books from, like, the Middle Ages.
Yeah, and
you're golden.
Although, I don't think... They were from up north, though, so I don't know if they were Southern.
Yeah, I think they were from, like, Connecticut or something.
Yeah.
Weren't they from Connecticut?
Yeah, I don't think there's too many Southern Baptist churches up there. Because you say Southern Baptist here in the South, that's a lot of leeway. They're kind of self-styled. Every church is its own goddamn thing.
Who's the one that, like, dance with, like, poisonous snakes and drinks Strychnine?
Oh, that's the fucking... I don't even think they're around anymore. Well, they're not the Shakers.
No, they don't do that.
What are they called? It's just a snake cult. They're drinking snake poison and dancing with...
Or that's
snakes.
What they say they're doing anyway.
They probably are. Snake poison. It's arsenic. They're drinking rat poison.
No, I said strychnine.
Strychnine, yeah.
They drink
strychnine, rat poison.
And they let themselves get bit by poisonous snakes. Although, like I said, I don't.
No, I don't think they let themselves get bitten. They handle them because it's just based on a verse that one verse that if you're really if God's really with you, then you can't be harmed by poisons and snakes. Basically, is what it says.
And
so,
they just built a whole religion out of that.
This is proof. This is proof that I'm with God. You know.
It's like, why don't you just, like, keep reptiles like a normal person instead of, like, having to build a whole religion about it? Come
and then
on now.
And then they'd get bitten, and they'd die. And they go, well, he was a fake. Well, other people...
But see, that's what I mean. That's the thing about religion that never like, you know, hangs right with me. It's just kind of like, well, whatever happens, it's fine.
Yeah.
It never makes them, like, question. They're like, oh, maybe we shouldn't be, like, drinking poison or getting bitten by poisonous snakes or something, or venomous snakes, actually.
No, these are tests. No.
That's what I'm saying.
These
but
are
it's
leaps
like,
of faith.
But see, that's the thing that they can always say, though. It's like, even if somebody gets bit by a venomous snake and then they die, they're like, oh, well, they obviously didn't have enough faith.
Right. Me and Jenny have come from very different backgrounds, and we have different ways of looking at the shit. To me, I consider myself a Christian mythicist. I don't believe any of that happened. It's mythology. But that doesn't mean mythology is lies. Read Joseph Campbell. Mythology can help a person fucking do great things. Because faith is powerful, very powerful. And sometimes logic and reason fucking fail you. And what got me through shit, especially military type stuff, is just faith. Faith in this fucking supernatural, faith in destiny, faith in yourself, faith in your friends, just all that kind of shit. It would fucking really help you. Because a lot of the fucking, a lot of endurance, life is about endurance, and endurance is about fucking mental power of just not giving up. And that could save your life. And if you don't have that, you could die. And so religions are basically doing that. A good religion does that. Gives you a survival skill. And I can understand how some dudes would be dancing with snakes and drinking poisons, because if they survive it, then their morale goes up. Okay? They believe stronger. Now they're fucking have they kind of have an added survival skill that, you know, I'm blessed. Fucking God's on my side. I can do anything. It might help them. Help, especially, definitely keep you from getting depressed. But, shit, man, there was shit we were doing in the army that fucking we should have just walking ourselves to death in the infantry, you know, fucking freezing cold, fucking hallucinating and shit. What got you through it was your faith in yourself and your friends and your unit and faith in your own strength and faith in the supernatural and all that shit. It works. That's what Star Wars is about.
My strength comes not from faith, but from spite.
That too. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's another thing is that fucking many times, you know what I mean? Fucking I trained with hatred in my heart. That actually, you will actually get stronger. Hatred can make you strong.
Yeah, that works for me.
That too. That too.
That works.
They teach people, oh, man, hatred's bad thing. No, hate is a good thing. It's a very good thing if it's applied properly.
Like I said, I don't know if it's so much. I don't know if I'd call it hatred. I think spite is kind of like just a better. I just want to. Yeah. I'm just around because I'm stubborn.
Yeah. Anger, hatred is propaganda in warfare is always designed to generate hatred in the hearts of your forces and your allies. You do this by showing people things that disgust them and anger them, and those two forces together cause hatred. And with hatred, you could keep your guys alive and kill the enemy, and then afterwards suffer much less fucking psychological trauma from it, because you don't care. You don't even care if you were right, because you hated them. That's all. You know, which keep you from getting depressed. Now later on, you're like, maybe we shouldn't have done that. Okay. But it's too late. That's in the past, you know.
But Camp Guy said, Extreme Northwest Georgia, we had a guy die from a rattlesnake bite about 5 or 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it does happen. Like, yeah. Rattlesnake bite, usually if you can get to a hospital, you're fine, but...
It's the same thing as walking on coals and other kinds of leaps of faith things. That's all. It's the same thing. You can pick up a snake and not get bitten. Those snakes, a lot of times, have been handled already. So you can start dancing with them. But it just makes them feel better. I understand it.
You know? Yeah, you know, like, yeah. It seems like a stunt, but okay.
Yeah.
You know.
But so is everything else. It's like slam dancing in the mosh pit and just doing other things that make you feel good, too. It's just like that. Just a different way of looking at it. This is the philosophy behind it. And that's what an exorcism is.
Yeah, it's just like
performance art. But if you believe it, it might work. Especially if the people involved, you know what I mean, the people you're trying to help, if they believe it, it might work.
Yeah.
The power of suggestion is powerful.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so anyway, let's get back to the case. So yeah. So we have this whole thing where she pushes Ed against the wall, which, like I said, I thought was very funny. So that night after that happens, the whole family sleeps together in the living room. Next day, Bonnie, the mom, and Jennifer, the daughter, they go to the town hall and research the history of the house. And they find out that, allegedly, a man named George Robertson, which is one of the names that the psychic wrote down, did indeed own the house in 1888, which was kind of almost like the date that was written down by the psychic. They go to the local cemetery, they said, and they immediately find his grave. I mean, the mom said on the show, she's like, oh, we just walked to the cemetery and immediately, like, there was his grave right there, which was, like, really weird. Now, the guy died in 1927, but they can't find out too much more information about him because there was a flood in town in 1955 apparently, and it destroyed a bunch of the records. Now they said after this particular thing happened, they said for a few days nothing happened, and for a while they kind of thought, oh well, maybe it's fine. But then, like, one evening the kids are wrapping Christmas presents and they're in one of the upstairs room, and then the doorknob to the room that they're in, like, starts, like, violently rattling, right? And nothing's happened for a few days. So all three kids are, like, fucking terrified at this, and they go tearing ass down the stairs to tell their mom. And the mom calls Lorraine. So Lorraine says, okay, well, I'm going to call a priest and he'll come and, like, bless the shit. She's like, I don't think it's going to get rid of the shit entirely. It never does. Usually it just makes it mad, at least according to these shows.
Don't make it mad.
But they're like, well, maybe it'll lessen it somewhat, so it's not quite as bad. So the priest comes and does his little hocus pocus thing. And then, like, the family said, okay, well, after that, like, the sort of oppressive atmosphere or whatever seemed to lift somewhat. Yeah, they always say that. But then, 2 days later, Bonnie starts feeling this overwhelming compulsion to draw. I will also note that they showed her actual drawings on the show, which, like, this is very
good.
Which were actually, like, quite good, I thought. Yeah. They were, like, a pencil or charcoal or something like that. So the first one they showed, like, she draws this tree and then, like, a sad-looking woman and, like, some other stuff. And she described it as being, like, there was a flood of images and emotions that were just, like, coming to her as though they were from outside. Like, she knew that they weren't from her. And she had to get them on paper. Like, she said sometimes it was just such a compulsion that she would, like, stay up all night, like, drawing because she had to get all these images out. And, like I said, she felt like she was channeling that more than they were coming from her. So she says that she became convinced that one of the spirits, Anna, who, like I said, that was another name that the psychic wrote down, that Anna is inside her head. And she said the impression that she got was that this, whoever this person was, had suffered some really great, like, horrible loss. Although they didn't really go more into it than that. So now one night, some undetermined time later, the family are all sleeping in the living room again. And then suddenly a bunch of books start flying off the bookshelves at them. Now, I'm not sure if it was anything like as impressive as what they showed on the show, because on the show, it's just kind of like, man, shit's like flying out of the bookshelves and they're just like, oh my God, like a barrage of shit. So I'm not sure if it actually happened like that. Nobody specifically mentioned it, that that's what had happened. But whatever it was, it must have been something big or something significant, because Bonnie calls Lorraine. And Lorraine says, okay, well, I'm going to set up an exorcism. And she says, oh, it's going to take a few days for the priest to do all the fasting and all the other pre-exorcism shit that they have to do before they get there. So I think it's going to be, I think she says it's going to be like 3 days. So the family is like, okay, well, should we like go stay at a motel or some shit? Because this is getting bad. We don't really want to be here with like books being thrown at our heads all the time. And Lorraine says, well, you can if you want, but it's probably better to like stay in the house and fight, because even if you go to the motel, the shit will probably follow you.
Okay.
And so, you know.
Now, Lorraine is talking about demons, but in my experience, poltergeist phenomena actually does that, because it's not centered around a place, it's centered around a person. The person is making it subconsciously. Subconscious is basically using psychokinesis to fucking animate a fictional ghost or an enemy. It's usually the idea is to hold the family together against a common foe, because the family might be kind of breaking apart. It's just funny how the Warrens would take things that were known about in 1960s parapsychology, but instead of saying it's RSPK, they said, no, it's demons.
They did seem to genuinely believe that.
Everything was demons,
I will say.
Because...
Well, Lorraine did. I don't know if Ed really believed it.
Because Ed and Lorraine did not believe that the Bible supports the ideas of fucking paranormal abilities. But the New Testament says that constantly. People using the power of God. People channeling the power of God. The angel of God descending upon somebody saying, this is my son, and then he can do miracles. It's all paranormal shit. And then they're casting out demons. They're becoming exorcists. Christianity was an exorcism cult back in 1st, 2nd century. Kind of doing what the Warrens are doing, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, they're originalists, those Warrens.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So she says, no, you probably just stay there, save your money, like, don't go to the Ramada or whatever, because the demon's just going to follow you. So they decide to stay in the house. So while they're in the house, like, Bonnie does another drawing, and they showed this one as well, and this one was like, it was kind of like, it looked sort of like a crooked pyramid type situation, and then it had like a big white light like glowing at the top of the pyramid, and then on one side of the pyramid there were kind of like beams of like heavenly light or whatever, and then on the other side there was like a really bad storm with lightning and all this other kind of crap. There was also three kind of like ghosty figures, like they were kind of like floating up towards the pyramid, and then there was like a heart that was like broken in half or something like that. So it was that. I don't know what that meant. They didn't really go into it. So Bonnie's mom, who noped the fuck out back on Thanksgiving, and with we don't know if she got any turkey or not, because for some reason that was a really important question for me. But she decides she didn't like the house, but she's like, well, it's Christmas, so I'm going to come back. So Bonnie's mom comes back for Christmas. But she's only in the house for a very short time. And then she apparently develops a very, like, an unexplained, very, very high temperature of 104 degrees. So Bonnie takes her to the hospital. And the doctors find out that the grandma also has a really weirdly, like, irregular heartbeat. Like, I don't know if they had any kind of medical diagnosis. They didn't say on the show. So they decide that they're going to keep her overnight for observation because they don't know what's the matter with her. So apparently Bonnie's mom, grandma, was, like, really religious and said prayers every night. So Bonnie and Jennifer are at the hospital visiting her, and they said that grandma is, like, doing her nightly prayers, but she can only, she couldn't say them right. Like, she can only say them backwards. So I was like, ooh, yeah. Demonic. But yeah, so she can only say them backwards, and so everybody gets a little freaked out about the situation. Meanwhile, at around the same time as all of that is going on, the older daughter, the one that we don't know what her name is, she's out in the car running errands, like Christmas errands, and she gets in a wreck. Now, she isn't hurt badly, but the car is apparently totaled. Like I said, it sounds like a coincidence, but, you know, I can see how they probably, like, linked all of that together. So, back at the hospital, a priest comes to the hospital and says prayers over Bonnie's mom. She said that while he was saying the prayers, she felt like she was being punched in the stomach, but then, like, he gave her, like, a communion wafer, and then, like, it all went away. So I guess there's that. And then I don't think that they talk about her anymore. 3 days later, it's exorcism time.
Yeah.
Exorcism time. So they bring in Lee the psychic, who apparently they tie her to the chair, right, with duct tape and shit, because apparently she's going to be the conduit for the demon. Because that's how this works. So this, I don't know, I kind of feel like this, with the end of this one was a little anticlimactic, because they did, like, tie the psychic to the chair, and then she does, like, kind of your standard possession shit, like, yeah, you know what I mean, like, screaming and yelling and stop praying and blah 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 and, like, doing all that kind of stuff. But she gives everybody, apparently she gives everybody, like, this big wicked grin, and then, like, breaks the chair she's tied to, which is very funny, because we were talking about this, because they were like, well, no human could have broken a chair. I'm like, seriously, it was probably just, like, a shitty, like, regular-ass dining room chair. I said, if you were tied to a chair and you were determined enough, you could probably break the
especially
legs
the
on
old,
that.
Especially the old wooden 80s to 70s chairs.
That's what I'm saying.
Just had a little peg sticking at the bottom. You pow, snap that fucking peg off.
Yeah, you could probably pull that off if you tried hard enough.
Your legs are strong.
Yeah, if you were just kind of like, you know what I mean? So, and like I said, I wasn't there. I just
probably what she did is just if her legs were tied to the legs of the chair, she probably just leaned forward until she was on her feet and then stood up, and that would just
pull it. Yeah, because like I said, the chairs weren't made of, like, titanium or anything like that. It's just like usually wood. So after that, there's kind of like some more yelling and screaming. And then the exorcism actually just seemed to work, and it was just kind of like, oh, okay, the end. there was that. They didn't even do, like, I was waiting for Lorraine to bring up the odor of sanctity thing, but she never did.
Not in this episode.
I kept saying, like, do we smell roses? Are we smelling roses? Come on, Lorraine.
Smell roses. The odor of sanctity.
I was like, say it.
Fucking, say
it.
Wah, wah, wah.
She didn't say
it. Some funny
that was another episode. That was another episode.
Yeah.
But I was waiting for it. I was waiting for it. But she doesn't say it. So the exorcism seemed to work, like I said, which that's crazy, because normally they're just kind of like, yeah, we did an exorcism, but then, like, it was fine for a while, and then, like, shit got really bad again, and we had to, like, get the fuck out. That's not what happened. Everything was fine. Now, everything was apparently hunky-dory after that for several years, they said. But then, a few years later, a developer starts kind of, like, digging into the lot across the street from their house, and apparently found one of those good old Native American burial grounds.
Yeah, you can't keep them out of the place.
I know that that caused so many hauntings
the
around
Indians
the fucking country.
Man. Yeah, just everywhere.
And they said that after that happened, like, after that was unearthed.
Oh, sex bot. Get rid of the sex bot, please.
Uh-oh. Yeah, somebody get rid of the sex bot. Does anybody actually really ever check on, click on those? I don't. It just seems like a waste of.
On the channel. Okay.
There it you seems go. Like a there waste.
You there you go.
Oh boy, Love Chat XYZ.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Go to the end, like the best adult dating site.
Yeah. They're in there talking.
I don't know. Maybe somebody will click on it.
I took some of it off.
Okay. Yeah, like I can't do it from here, so we don't. I don't know if we have any other like. I don't see any little wrenches or anything like that.
Yeah, sex bots coming out of nowhere.
Sex bots, but yeah. So they said that after that happened, that like some diminished paranormal activity started happening at the house again, but it wasn't really all that bad. So they just decided that they could live with it. And like I said, the show aired in 2005, and they lived in the house, and they moved into the house in 1998. I'm not entirely sure like how long they lived there. The only other source that I found, and this is kind of interesting, not a hell of a lot of outside info on this one. The only thing that I really found, there was an article in the Valley Independent Sentinel for this area, like of Connecticut, and it was dated July 24th, 2012. And it talked about this case a bit. Now, mostly it talked about it in the context of, in 2012, six people aged 18 to 22, got arrested on this property for trespassing on Friday the 13th of 2012 after they went there to do some ghost hunting. They said it was five men and one woman, and they weren't from Seymour, like the town where the house is. They said that they got the idea from not a haunting show, because that had been like a few years in the past at this point, but they said there was a Friday the 13th radio broadcast of something called the Chaz and AJ Show on a local radio station, I guess, called WPLR. And the DJs said what the address of the real house was.
What?
So they decided they were going to go there and check it out.
That's a lot.
Now, as... Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't know if that... how that happened. But, right. Yeah. So, as usual, the house they used on the show was not the actual house. The article did mention the house was on Buckingham Road. It didn't say what the number was.
Yeah.
But, but you know, Buckingham Road, Seymour, I don't know how long that, you know, I'm not from there, Seymour, Connecticut, but that's where they said the house was, but they didn't say what the number was. But apparently this radio show said what the address was, so they went there.
Look, people, don't go down there fucking with those that house, all right? It's not that house. If the case is correct, if it happened the way the haunting told it, it's probably poltergeist, which means it's not the house, it was the girl. And she just, and you know, she outgrew it and it stopped. That's so, it's not location based, it's people based.
So, like, according to the article, according to this article from 2012, nobody in town particularly remembered this house being haunted until a haunting talked about it in 2005.
Right.
Now, they did talk to one guy whose name was Dan Rivera, and he lived in Seymour, and he founded the Connecticut Old School Paranormal, like, group. He didn't necessarily deny that the house was haunted, but he said basically just what you said. He said if it was back then it was dealt with back then, and there probably isn't anything going on there right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, please don't go there. Now, in 2012, when this article was written, I don't know when the Beckwith family moved out, but in 2012, when the article was written, the house had been vacant for many years. And the article went on to say that it was owned by a guy named Taher Khan, who lives overseas. I don't know if this is still relevant, because like I said, this was 10 years ago. That says it had been in foreclosure, and Khan acquired it sight unseen in 2009 as part of a deal to buy two other foreclosed properties. In 2012, he was trying to sell the property, but said it needs $20,000 to $40,000 worth of work to fix it up.
Right.
They apparently asked the guy, they said, well, is the house haunted? Or they didn't ask the guy that owned it, but they asked the lawyer that was representing him, like the real estate lawyer. And the guy says, if you want to buy a haunted house, it's a haunted house. Yeah. And if you don't want to buy a haunted house, then it's not haunted. Yeah. And I was like, that's a good answer. Now other residents who live nearby said they don't remember anything bad ever happening at the house, and they don't remember any rumors about it being haunted prior to that episode airing in 2005. So take it that way you will. We're not saying like the family was lying or anything like that, but we are saying that the house doesn't have any history behind it. It's not like, oh, that's the local haunted house and this family bought it. Like, there wasn't really anything about that.
Yeah.
So
I believe it's poltergeist, and poltergeist is not location-based. It's people-based. You know, just reiterating it.
Yeah.
The issues with the people were resolved and the phenomena fucking subsided. But you go there and you could go to that house now and there'd be nothing there.
Yeah, and that's basically what that other person was saying too. Yeah. It's just, but, and I don't know if he was just saying that to like discourage people from going there, like those people that got arrested for trespassing in 2012, but you know, I'm just saying there hadn't been, like I said, it didn't have a history of being haunted, because I did look it up and it's crazy because I was looking it up and I looked up their last name, which was Beckwith, because they used their real last name on the show. And I came up with this one site, and it had, like, pictures of a real house. And I was like, oh, this must be the real house. But then I realized that there's another Beckwith haunted house, but it's in Michigan. So it's not the same house. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and I didn't even realize that until I started looking at the pictures and reading it. I was like, oh, wait, this is Michigan. Like, this other one's Connecticut. So it's totally different. Hugo said, have you seen or reviewed The Vast of Night? Yes, we did. Yes, we did. That was a while back, but yeah, I really, really did like that movie. You liked that movie too.
Yeah, I don't remember which one that was.
That was the one about, like, it was set in the 1950s, and then, like, the they kept hearing the, like, the alien signals, like, coming over the radio and shit like that. Yeah, that was a really good movie. Wasn't that, like, I feel like that was, like, an Amazon original or something like that.
It was interesting.
But yeah, that was a good movie. I liked that a lot. But we did a review of it. I don't remember how long ago it was. It was a while back. Captain Crazy said, I'll stay away from that house, LOL. Yeah, it's like I said, I know what street it's on, but I don't know what street. But like I said, there's probably nothing going on there anyway. Yeah. And I don't know if anybody, because like I said, that article said that it was, you know, that nobody lived there, but that was back in 2012. So I don't know if somebody's bought it and fixed it up, or if they've torn it down, or I couldn't really find anything about it. So that's, so there you go. All right, so are you done?
Yeah.
Yep. Man, we went on for an hour and a half about that shit.
Yep.
All right, so I guess that'll do it for today. We'll have to go and find a movie to watch to talk about tomorrow. So hopefully you guys will join us again tomorrow evening where we talk about a movie. We don't know which one it's going to be yet, but it'll be a surprise to you guys and to us. So thanks for hanging out with us this evening, and we'll see you guys again tomorrow. Bye.